This is Anodize. On this episode, we'll be discussing people and technology. I'm Clinton Phillips, and I have a special guest with me, Benjamin Alexander. How are you going?
How's it going? I'm doing good.
Yeah, good. Okay, so what we're talking about on this episode is we're talking about people and technology, how they use technology and how good they are with using technology. Because have you ever had a friend or a relative that... you know, that they're trying to get something done on a computer or something like that, and you know that they just throw their hands up in the air and just declare that they're, you know, I'm not good with technology. Have you ever had that?
All the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the first point that we're going to look at, because it's not something that people think of very often, but what is technology and what do we think of as technology? My definition of technology is sort of, well, a rock tied to a stick is technology, but you know, that's something that we'd never think of that as technology. So what are your thoughts on that?
I think about it in a similar way, although recently it's come, you know, it's been a topic that I've been chewing on a bit, and one of the things that I found to be a little more useful way to put it than that. So we're talking about, you know, talking about an axe there, right? We're talking about, you know, a hammer, whatever.
Yeah.
A rock is to do just that. Is to name things differently and to break down technology versus tools. And there's actually a really good here. I'll send you the link here. There's a really good speech that a guy named David Stavis gave. It's up on SoundCloud, and it sort of explains this concept, but really just that, and it's sort of rooted in these words that technology is you know, the etymology of that is from the ancient Greek, and it's the study or knowledge of an art or skill, whereas tool is you know, from the old English, and it's really the tool. It is the object that's used to do something, to prepare, to and I think that was originally the term, that it was meant to, a tool was what you use to prepare something else. And obviously the words change and the language change, but I really like that distinction.
Yeah.
And to me, I think in sort of in our modern language, it's sort of the difference between a feature and a product, right? That the hammer is a tool, but it's made up of a combination of technology, you know, the technology of forging the head of it, the technology of casting or sawing from wood, whatever, the handle, these elements come together to make the tool. And it's semantic, but I think when you break it down and I almost don't like the word technology anymore, right? Because it just, because what we're talking about is, as soon as I say technology, then we're immediately thinking iPhones. And that's consumer electronics, right?
Yeah.
Like it's, and so that's, you know, that's kind of my initial take on it is redefining it. You know, lets us kind of go a little deeper, I think.
Yeah, well, I think that's a very good distinction to make, the difference between a tool and technology, and the definition that you gave. You sort of think, well, it seems very appropriate that you know, technology is tied to a skill, because a lot of things that we do think of technology, they require some skill to operate. You know, it's not something that people just know how to use. Like a hammer is something that you know how to use. You give a hammer to a little kid, and they know which end to pick up, and they know to wave it around, and eventually they work out, hey, I can hit things with it, and suddenly everything's broken. But you know, a car or a computer or anything like that, you have to teach them how to use it. You know, there's a skill that has to be taught there. So I think that's a very good way of putting it.
Well, but even with the hammer, right? I mean, the a five-year-old swinging the hammer around, you know, if you tell him to go do some carpentry work, you're going to get a very different result than someone that's been using, you know, hammers for decades, right? I mean,
you'll get a block of wood with five nails in it, and they're all at different angles, and some of them are bent.
And you know, using the car is another great example. You think about, I don't know, a buddy of mine gave me this number, and I don't know if it's true or not, but I like it. It makes sense. Is that you're really not a good driver until you've been driving for about 10 years. And, you know, that's really the point where unless you're, you know, exceptional on either end of the scale, that you've gotten to, you know, the level where everything's second nature, where you don't have to think, where, you know, it's just fluid and normal, and you've dealt with enough situations that you know what to do. You know, it's that idea, whatever, the 10,000 hours, whatever, you know, to become a professional, become an expert in something. And yeah, so I mean, this, you know, a car is this combination of technologies that comes together to make the tool, which gets us from point A to point B, or, you know, gives us some sort of exciting feeling when we're driving, or, you know, or it's a form of conspicuous consumption. I mean, it's a tool we use for different things, but our relationship with it evolves kind of individually and over time, I think, I guess, the way of putting it. So yeah, I agree with kind of what you're getting at there.
Yeah. So why do you think that, you know, a computer is still considered technology, whereas a car, you know, isn't considered technology anymore?
Well, I wonder, right? I mean, I tend to buy kind of used, a little bit beat up sports cars. Yeah. So I'm always, you know, 5 or 10 years behind whatever is going on in the car world. So when I get in a new car, things like the stereo controls on the wheel and a lot of the new interfaces for audio, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
We're kind of bleeding in right into that one of the other points, but I find it confusing and unnatural, and you know, half of me resents it, and because I feel like I'm losing the purity. And I mean, there's probably no better example of that than the whole, you know, the manual transmission thing, right?
Yes.
That I'm a key feature or a key component to the experience of driving is removed, and my relationship to the vehicle is changed. So, but yeah, that said, yeah, I can't deny that. I mean, ultimately, you know, if you say the word technology, people are thinking this certain subset of, you know, of tools, and that right now it seems like that's computers. Although I just do wonder if we get out of our, you know, our culture a little bit and expand out, I don't know how well that holds up. But for us in our day-to-day lives, yeah, it probably still does, right? That, you know, when as a geek, when you run into someone having a problem with technology, it's probably not their car, because they probably went to a mechanic.
Yeah.
And that's sort of where it gets interesting to me, is that culture developed around automobiles, and it developed around things like TVs and stuff like that to a certain extent. And it exists for computers, but it doesn't seem to be the same way. And I don't have any real insight on that, but I sense that, I mean, I'm asked all the time to, or even worse, sometimes I'm not asked, and you know, to fix a computer or to solve a problem, and it's puzzling.
Yeah, you know, I sometimes wonder if it's just a simple fact of, you know, these things have been around a lot longer. You know, we've had cars for the best part of a century. TVs have been around for a long time, and you know, a telephone, that's, you know, they've been around for ages, and people, they're all these just, you know, things that we have in our households every day, and perhaps it's just that we've been accustomed to having them for so long, like people have just grown up with them, that it's no longer thought of as technology, because it's not new anymore. It's just part of the furniture. It's just
what
part of the experience every day, that, you know, we've just grown up with it since we were kids. Because I think when the phrase "I'm not good with technology," do you tend to find that it's older people that are saying that?
I'd say that that's one of the trends, but you know, one pattern that I would expect, you know, to see, and that is probably right. But I'd also say that, you know, I think you'll see like the similar idea of saying that I do. I know, I understand technology. I knew how this worked. You know, talk about, you know, as I have relatives that, you know, program mainframe computers, or, you know, have been working with computers for a long, long, long time.
Yeah.
And they're confident, and rightly so. But there is a disconnect and some amount of confusion and difficulty in communicating when we're talking about, you know, these new phones or you know, their iPads, or how like certain web services work, those sort of things. So it kind of branches off in a couple directions there. And then I also see it with people, you know, my own age or younger. And this is just, you know, anecdata, right? But it's the same sort of thing. And but I think, yeah, it's that phrase, you know, that saying that I'm bad at it is, I think that's fading with time. And I think you're right, is that, you know, a big part of this is that all these other tools and technologies, whatever we want to call them, they've kind of crystallized into something everyone can understand. Your microwave is this magnificent, marvelous, you know, amazing thing, but you just put a thing in and hit one and it goes. And it's become an appliance. And we see that happening with computing in some way, but at the same time, there's still this parallel path going on where it is, it's complex and fiddly and hard to understand. It's difficult. I think you just have to parse it out for each person a little bit. Figure out what their back, you know, I'm sorry, I've been running too long here. The one thing that, well, I'll wait. I'll save that thought. You go ahead.
So it's the where this whole topic came from is just, you know, sort of watching my family members and how they use computers or phones or things like that. And it's my grandfather on my mum's side. He's 85 this week. He doesn't know how to use computers. He's only just learning. And you give him a laptop, or even the TV, because the TVs are getting a lot more complicated these days. And I remember when he did get the microwave, that confused the hell out of him. Didn't know how to use that. But yeah, he'll use things, and he's the one that says, "I'm not good with technology," and you know, he's keen to learn,
right?
But he just has this sort of struggle with learning how to use all this stuff. But if you look at my grandfather on my dad's side, you know, he's using an iMac to make movies with iMovie, so he's learnt how to do that, and he's not particularly good at it. The stuff that he puts out isn't anything great, but he can get the job done. So it's sort of, this whole thing came from looking at those two people, and you know, that there'd only be about 10 years between them. So why is one fairly good at picking up these new skills and the other one just has a really hard time?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, do you have a theory on that? Or I have some ideas that I could ask you questions and we could maybe parse it out. But the one thing I wonder is, well, let's talk about when and where they grew up and what they did for their careers.
Yeah. Well, the one that's not good with technology, he's been a farmer all his life. So he's you know, so I guess his experience would be more mechanical things, you know, mm-hmm. farm machinery and, you know, the cars and trucks and utes and tractors and things like that. And
so he could probably rebuild a carburetor.
Yeah, yeah. He should be able to.
So he's not bad with technology.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he can fly an airplane. He's still got a pilot's license, I believe.
Right. And the other one, your other grandfather?
The other one, he was a wool classer, and not any. I don't know how much, like how mechanically minded he is. I know that he used to drive, you know, manual cars, but then he got an automatic, and you know now he just, you know, he'll tell people, "Oh, get an automatic; it's much easier to drive." And you know, so he sort of.
You do come to terms with that eventually.
Yeah,
I'm starting to get there. But
I don't think he's the person who. You know, pulls things apart and puts them back together, or you know, he's not mechanically minded like my other grandfather is, where he can fix things because he has to. You know, mm-hmm. you have to be able to fix things yourself when you're on the farm.
Well, and that's you know, I guess that's, it doesn't seem surprising to me, and I don't know if, you know, I could back this up with anything really, but. This, you know, to me, I have this idea that there's just a certain amount of cognitive load that any of us can take at a time, right? And
yeah,
and I think about that. You know, cars is a great example of that, and or you know, hacking on computers. You know, the reason I switched from PC to Mac is boring, and everyone said it. I got tired of, you know, having to do all the fiddly stuff, and it's not that I couldn't, or not that it's not even an interesting discussion. Everyone's heard it, but. It's, you know, yet just a couple years ago, I ripped out every part of my car and, you know, redid the exhaust and retuned the turbocharger and learned how to program. I mean, it was this, you know, monster task. And yeah. I did it, and I would never do it again. But, you know, but I have a car that has twice the horsepower and it makes cool sounds and goes really fast, but I drive 5 miles under the speed limit all the time. I mean, it's just, you know, there was some urge in me to do that. That it's just there for me, but I can't do it with everything in my life. And I think about, you know, if you're living on the farm and you have all this machinery around you that needs to work, that it's your livelihood, and they're expensive. You know, they're not replaceable easily. And then I'm going to learn how to take care of that stuff, you know, to an exceptional degree. But like with what I do in my life, I mean, yes, computers are my livelihood, but they're disposable. I can just get another one.
Yeah.
And
it's not going to cost you $60,000 to replace.
Right. If everything was lost in a fire, it would suck, but Right, and it wouldn't be, it wouldn't be a problem, and it's getting easier to do that. So, and you know, when you think about devices and how that trend is becoming, you know, they're becoming more ubiquitous, and at the same time, at least inside any one ecosystem, right, it's becoming easier and easier to go back and forth between, you know, devices. So that's good. But at the same time, you know, as a geek, as someone that's ripped things apart, I can see the downside to that. That I wonder what effect that's going to have on, you know, the generation coming up. You know, people born in, I like to use 1995. That's the year I like to kind of look at now.
Hmm.
You know, people that during their time in high school they saw computers change from something that sat on a desk or maybe you carried around in a bag to something that's in your pocket, And it's not to be like, you know, not to present some reverse, like it's some duality or a mirror image, but the way that someone who's 18 interacts with technology seems to me to be very, very different than the way I do, than the way my mom does, you know, than the way my grandparents do. And so I don't know. I try to think about, and that's kind of a new thing for me to really kind of recognize that, even though I think we all knew that was coming.
Yeah.
It's just that it's right now and you can see it in action. I don't know.
Yeah, well, it is interesting to look at, you know, the way different age groups use technology. I mean, because even looking at within my own family, you know, Mum, I gave her a MacBook Pro and she uses that for web browsing and email. My dad, he does things, you know, a little bit more advanced than that, but you know, he's sort of happy to have the hardware that he's got. You know, we got our second computer was Power Macintosh 6500, and we used that from what 97 to 2004. And the only reason that we upgraded was because, well, he wanted to burn DVDs, so you can't do that in the old one. We've got to get a new one. So we got an eMac that was 2004, and he didn't update that until 2009. So he's sort of happy to use what he has, and, you know, doesn't sort of delve into the operating system or any of the applications and sort of, you know, learn how to get the most out of them. He just sort of uses the bare minimum. He knows the bare minimum to get things done and, you know, get things done efficiently. And then you look at someone like me, you know, I want to know how everything works and I want to know all the shortcuts and everything like that. But then you look at my younger siblings, you know, my brother, he's on his computer a lot. And he's on it all the time. But if I'm talking to him, and it's sort of like, because the other day I wanted him to check something in the network settings and system preferences, and I said, "Oh, yeah, just open system preferences," and he didn't know what system preferences was. And I said, "It's the little gear thing in the dock." Didn't know what the dock was either.
Right.
So it's just funny how, you know, how people can be using these things all the time, but not learn the technology, not learn the terminology, sorry, you know, and things like that.
Well, what's really fast, you know, and I know we're going into the next point there, talking about when this starts happening to yourself, right? And the example for this is perfect. It's what we've been talking about on Twitter is the OS X audio MIDI setup.
Yeah.
That there's this, pretty fantastic, if confusing and kind of opaque, system for routing audio around and dealing with audio devices, your hardware, built into every Mac. It's been there for, I think, since 2006, that I discovered, I don't know, several months ago, looked at a little bit, right, and kind of recognized it was something cool, the same way Soundflower was something cool.
Yeah.
And I kind of set it aside, but it did take, you know, really just some outrageous frustration with Skype to get me to dig into it. And so I kind of feel, you know, it's like Automator or AppleScript, right? Like, knowing that there's this amazing tool and I'm not using it because I'm lazy.
Yeah.
Like coming to terms with that that I'm a human and like our laziness it really is a feature. It's a good thing. It's tough. It's really tough, you know, for someone that's with my, you know, kind of person I am to accept that it's better to not worry about something till you need it.
Yeah.
Than to kill yourself trying to optimize every last thing. And, you know, and it's illustrated in, like, our conversation, you know, over the past couple of days, right, that we're like, oh, I'm like, this is amazing. And I immediately dive into Logic and set up this incredibly complex system to do it all.
Yeah.
And then I try to use it, doesn't work. And I don't know why, because I probably just screwed something up. You tried to use it and, you know, oh, FaceTime audio still has too much line noise.
Yeah.
And that's all that mattered. That is the only thing that mattered, was whether or not FaceTime audio was going to give us that quality boost.
Yeah.
you know, and I don't know, maybe your example is different than mine, and we'll figure out maybe it's fine. It just, you had a bad connection at that time, whatever. But like jumping in on everything makes it impossible to figure out what the one thing is that matters. So I think about, you know, what you're saying with your dad. Maybe it's not a great idea to only ever worry about what you need right now, but it might be a good idea to only ever worry about what you'll need next week, right?
Or yeah.
Speaking metaphorically, to kind of bridge that gap, because, you know, the question, you know, will you have in the show notes, will there ever be a point when people like ourselves struggle with future technologies? Yes, right now.
Yeah.
For me, and I'm 32. I don't know. I don't understand. I don't really understand Facebook. I don't either.
I tried.
I just use it the way...
enough about how it works to do the basic stuff. But anything beyond posting status updates or a photo or something like that, I'm just like, no, this is too hard. They've made it too hard. There's too many things that you can do in this thing. Facebook just frustrates me.
It took me a while to catch on. I mean, like little things with Twitter. Like, I still don't know what MT means. I have no idea.
Modified tweet.
Oh, well, there we go.
Yeah.
But why did, you know, so more example, pick on myself, right? Why didn't I ask that? Why didn't I look that up?
Yeah.
This is what's interesting to me is that, and I talked about this, well, I forget. This top, I'm glad, you know, I appreciate you inviting me on the show because it's something that I'm glad you guys, you know, you and John are thinking about this, and I've been chewing on it.
Hmm.
Because, you know, I see this happening and, you know, and probably part of this, like, is, you know, I'm a new father. We have, you know, our daughter, you know, was born in 2013. What is the world going to look like for her when she's using this stuff? Right.
Yeah.
And so I'm struggling now and I'm struggling even thinking about, you know, what's important for me to know how to do or to use and what, you know, what I want my relationship with it to be. Mm. And, I don't know. What do you think? What are your thoughts?
I think I do agree that, you know, the point that we are struggling with it is now, because, you know, we don't know everything and there are some things that, you know, we have trouble understanding or, you know, it takes that bit of extra effort to figure out. I mean, I had to recently. I set up Amazon S3 so that we could host all the episodes on there, and I sort of dove into it head first, and then once I was in there, I sort of realized that this is a lot harder than what I thought it was. I need to set aside a few hours and seriously read the documentation to know that I'm doing this properly, and that was difficult because there was just a lot of information that I had to keep track of. And especially when setting up all the security stuff, I'm going, okay, this information is seriously important. Don't stuff this up. So, you know, there are those learning anything new. Sometimes you can pick it up because there's sort of a familiarity, you know, you've done it before. Like I at the beginning of the year, I got a Nikon D5200, and so previously I've only had point and shoots, but now I've got a DSLR, and I had to learn how to use that. Well, that was fairly easy because I already knew how to use a camera, but, you know, there's setting up Amazon, I'm going, shit, you know, I know how to set things up, but I've never done anything like this before.
Right, yeah, and I went through... I knew it would be hard because I had tried to use S3 way back before they had, I mean, it was like all command line stuff. And,
oh, wow.
And that was before I was really even comfortable with the command line. You know, it was, so it's much nicer now, but
I'm so pleased I got into it when it, you.
Yeah. It's you know, kudos to Amazon. I think they built a great thing, obviously, because it powers half the web.
Yeah.
But, but, you know, I did, you know, the reason I did that was, and when I made that post about it, that I didn't want to use Libsyn for all kinds of reasons. It's not criticizing Libsyn, I just didn't want it, it wasn't right for me.
Yeah.
And I also wanted some more, and I still do want some more flexibility than what Squarespace offers. But in the time that I, you know, started doing the Pulling the String show, and now, you know, that's, I've spent, you know, a couple hours every day, or sometimes all day, or sometimes all weekend, like, you know, programming, you know, little scripts on my computer, or, you know, I'm working slowly on this Rails app to kind of distribute everything on its own. I played around with some iOS stuff for seeing about, you know, making a little app kind of like how 5x5 does for the network. All these little things. And you know, some of that's just getting a survey, right? Like, I just want to see what looks like it's coming close to being the next thing to do. And some of that comes from experience working in a, you know, a startup and like doing the death march thing and all that, the whole cliche. And having to throw a football to yourself, or a rugby ball, or whatever. You guys, rugby?
It depends which state you're in.
Right. Okay. Well, to basically toss a ball to yourself a year later.
Yeah.
And that's really hard to do. And it's, you know, it's, you know, the hockey puck metaphor of like skating to where the puck is going.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's dribbling a basketball. Is you have to make it from one end of the court to the other, and you need to pay attention to all these other things while you're still, you know, with one hand keeping this ball moving without grabbing, without holding it, without getting too attached to it. And I think that, you know, I don't know, I like to get like kind of visual metaphors like that. I feel like that's what I've learned to do, and not through any sort of intelligence, just through just a solid decade and a half of pain, of just, you know, failure after failure after failure, or a horrible mistake, you know, because I thought something would be some great solution. Yeah. And found out, as you did, like, either, oh, this is way more complicated, or it doesn't do what I want it to do. And I guess to wrap up that weird digression there is that the same 3 months that I've been kind of working on these systems to do it myself, well, you know, Squarespace has improved their statistics. I found Go Square, and that really, like, I'm happy with my web stats now. And I found this, you know, little thing for doing basic download stats on S3. And it's good enough. It's like good enough for me right now. So that problem like solved itself with, you know, with basically me spending a couple bucks.
Yeah.
And I'm in on a beta of the new Mixlr app, which is the system for podcast, is a website where you can podcast live, or do, you know, do any kind of audio thing live. And there's a chat room, and it's a cool site. Well, they've got this beta now where you can also feed in, probably using audio MIDI setup, different tracks into the thing.
Oh, okay.
And maybe that's the solution for our kind of problem. It might not be, maybe I was wrong. Maybe FaceTime isn't it, or maybe this weird setup that I was working on isn't it. It might just be using this and having all the heavy lifting take place on a server.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess it's just sort of accepting that it's like the Google cliche for me is if I have a problem, someone else smarter than me has already had this problem, and it's a good chance it's been solved.
Yeah.
And I only really try to worry about problems where I cannot even find an answer on Google. So I don't know, like it's kind of scary though, because I really worry about solving the wrong problem.
Hmm. So you've mentioned programming a few times. That's something that I struggle with. And, I don't think I can. Well, it's a combination of things. I can't really teach myself how to program, and the other thing is the, you know, looking for tutorials on the web. That can be an exercise in pain and frustration, because
oh yeah.
A lot of times you find a tutorial and you think, oh yes, this is good. I can follow this, and you're following it through, and you get to maybe step 8, and they say, oh yeah, just do this thing. And you're like, wait. What's this thing? You haven't explained it.
The wall, right? Yeah. And I started programming with, I watched David Hanmeyer Hansen's awesome video in whatever, 2004, 2005 for Ruby on Rails. And, you know, boom, 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 pow, there's a blog site. Boom, 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 pow, he's made another site. And I went from thinking, okay, I'm a web designer, to holy crap, I can do this.
Yeah.
And so I just jumped right in, and it was exactly that experience. And this is, it's famous for that kind, you know, those kind of frameworks. You know, Rails is, you know, the the best example of that, probably, where it's very opinionated and it's all about convention, you know, convention over configuration. And it'll take you, you can get a really long way. And if you're building certain kind of things, you can get all the way just doing it, doing what it says and not having to think too much. But as soon as you step over that line, if you don't recognize that you're still an amateur and you don't know what you're doing,
yeah,
just boom. And that, so yeah, I empathize what you're saying about learning to program, because it's, on the one hand, you've got this, you want to be pragmatic, right? You want to make something, you just want to make the damn thing.
Yeah, exactly.
And you don't want to, you know, and we're probably getting to point five, right? But you don't want to subject yourself to the experts and the people who are going to tell you, no, you got to learn this. No, you need to learn C. Oh, you know, your linear algebra is pretty poor. And to me, I just basically, you know, I did that. I banged my head against the wall on projects, on things that I actually had to get out the door, until I worked with, you know, a couple specific really good, you know, real programmers, real developers,
yeah,
who I was lucky enough that they took the time to teach me, and to teach me in the same way that I would teach someone that doesn't know how to use a computer about, you know, control C, control V, or, you know, command C, control, you know, how to use, yeah, copy and paste, to explain that this isn't, you know, I'm not teaching you the answer. I'm teaching you the way to think about it. There are certain things that are going to happen and you're going to need to approach them in this way. And sometimes, you know, sometimes I would be taught that you don't need to worry about how this works. You just need to do this thing and don't ask why.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, that was a tough adjustment as, you know, a confident, maybe arrogant person who just thinks that, I know what I'm doing and don't tell me. And someone who had a hard time saying, hey, I don't know what I'm doing here. I think I screwed up.
Yeah.
That's tough. It's really tough for people to do, and not using any group. That's just a tough thing for us to do as humans.
Yeah. I think it's two things there. It's, you know, knowing that you've stuffed up, and, you know, and then there's the thing, well, I got to admit that I've stuffed up.
Right.
Because sometimes you just don't know what you've done wrong, or if you've done anything wrong.
Right. And maybe you haven't done something wrong because you just don't. It's just the way it is.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's something that's a mistake that everybody makes. You see people all the time on Twitter just talking with people that, you know, they spent all day debugging, you know, some code, and they forgot a comma. You know, they didn't close out the line. They didn't. Yeah. You know, we all do stupid stuff, and to me, I think that's where we're kind of like getting closer to the kind of the heart of it is how do you approach that process of learning or asking for help and then helping people if you're on the other side of it, and it's tricky. I mean, it's a minefield.
Yeah. So I guess we'll move on to our final point how do people who already know, like, they've learnt these skills and they're, you know, really good at it, how do those people teach the people who don't know?
You just yell at them. Honestly, sometimes I think it's what you need to do.
Yeah.
but the yelling, you know, it has to be with love and explaining. You need to, it's not, you know, you want to be like a coach, right?
Mm.
And someone that's getting you riled up to go beat the other team or to make it through the last mile of a race, right? Because to make it personal, to think about my own example and when you guys asked me to come do this, literally like minutes before, I had just, you know, I messaged my mom, who You know, she's been using computers a long time. She's an educator. She runs, you know, libraries for a school district, is in charge of all kinds of technology.
Yeah.
But she's not up to date on a lot of, you know, a lot of the new stuff, and, you know, the iPad's new, and it, you know, famously, you know, big bureaucratic systems like schools are going to take a while to adapt. So she has to live in this weird, you know, gray world. And my brother, well, long story, she just got her first Mac. She got a MacBook Air, one of the, you know, pretty recent one. So pretty great computer for her. Big yeah. jump up. But it was, you know, she got to that point where it is now time to make the jump. Mm. You know, you need to just jump in the deep end and do this. And she was having problems with her iPad from work. The screen was just busted. It doesn't work, and the thing was broken.
Yeah.
And I had been telling her for, you know, she'd be asking, what should I do? And I said, you need to just make a Genius Bar appointment. And then a week later, it's still broken. I'm like, you should make a Genius Bar appointment. And finally, it's like, you know, she kept asking me. I say, stop asking me. I gave you the answer.
Yeah.
And you know, she ended up just there. Well, I don't even think she even made the Genius Bar appointment. You know, one of the people at work just gave her a new one. They, you know, sidestepped the rules. But, yeah. But you know, I talked with her about it and, you know, helped her set up her new Mac and you know, fast forward a couple of weeks. Now she's on the new, she's on the Mac. She's got it set up. She transferred all her things over, and she's good to go. You know, the Toshiba's done, and she's learning the new idioms and the new system, and she'll be just fine.
Yeah.
But the thing that was to me that was when I did kind of yell at her a little bit and said, just do this thing. It struck me that, you know, am I being the guy from the Saturday Night Live skit, you know, the which I put in the show notes, the Nick Burns, the your company's computer guy, you
yeah.
know, am I, when I told her to go to the Genius Bar, why didn't she, and why is it my fault? Because it's not, if I'm trying to help her, I'm taking that responsibility, right?
Yeah.
She's my mom. I want her to, you know, I want her to be happy and to not be frustrated and have this problem. And what, you know, what was the hesitation for her just to go and do that?
Hmm.
And I think, well, it's obvious, right? She's spent her entire working career in a, you know, in a field where there were gatekeepers around technology, where there were rules, and she was using, you know, crappy Windows PCs that were always old and out of date. You know,
yeah,
it's school. They're not using, you know, top of the line Macs. It just wasn't the case. So probably every experience she's ever had with asking for help has ended with pain. So yeah, why would you ask for help?
Yeah. Yeah, I could certainly say that. Yeah, if you do have that, like one or two bad experiences, why are you going to go ask for help?
Think about going to Best Buy or you know, a big box retailer. You know, and if you were ever dumb enough to do that in the past, oh well, there was a terrible experience. So now you want them to go. You want to tell someone to go into the Apple Store, the most, you know. I mean, it's friendly, it's nice, but it's intimidating if you know, it's loud, it's noisy, it's chaotic, everyone's 20 years younger than you and better looking than you, and you know I put myself in her shoes. You want me to go talk to some spiky haired 18-year-old to tell me how to use my iPad? And I know that if she went and did that, probably the guy, you know, whoever it is, would do a good job and she'd be, the problem would be solved. But hell, I wouldn't do it. I was in her shoes.
I can understand that. And going into an Apple store, it's like we've only got one this year, and you go in there, it's really busy, and you never know who to talk to.
Right.
And I mean, I've had one Genius Bar appointment. Also, I spoke to the people at the door, and I said, oh yeah, well I've got a Genius Bar appointment, and they said, oh yeah, what's your problem? And I quickly explained it, and they said, oh yeah, just go over there and speak to this person. So you go over there and speak to that person, and they didn't know that I had an appointment, so I just walk up and I start talking to this person, and and he's going, oh well, you need to have an appointment. I said, well, actually I do have an appointment. And then, okay, so now I have to sit at the Genius Bar and wait for my person to come over, because I was early, so I think it was about 10 minutes early, so sort of wait for someone to become available, and it can be, you know, because I've gone through, you know, three or four people there just to get the problem solved. So, you know, imagine your mum walking in and going, oh, there's people right. everywhere. Who right. do I speak to?
Right. Yeah. And it's kind of, they're a little famous for that as you know, it's a, I remember reading some articles a few years ago about, you know, the psychology of shopping and that, you know, I mean, Apple is, you know, designed in California, right? Those stores are the way those stores operate are very strange to, you know, Midwesterners like me. I mean, we like lines and we like, you know, big signs to say where you need to go. We like to queue up and we're very polite, you know, and we always start our sentences with sorry. I mean, it's just, and it's fine. I mean, but once you realize that, hey, these people are cool and they're actually, you know, even if I don't get what I want, they still are at least they're going to pretend to care about me and do a good job of pretending.
Yeah.
But if I, you know, I can say that and I believe that because of, you know, because the second Mac I bought was a refurbished G5 tower that I bought with money I got from the first website I did.
Yeah.
And it had a bad processor. And I, you know, went through like one round of repairing, got on the phone with them. It didn't work. And so I called this guy, I called him up, AppleCare, whatever. And, you know, it's no big deal. But basically I said, hey, I need this to do my work. And it's really becoming a problem. And I wasn't, you know, it wasn't a big fight. But I said, I need to figure out how to get this fixed. He's like, hold on a second. You know, click, a couple minutes later, we're sending you a new one. When you get it, we're also going to have a box to send the old one back.
Okay.
And so, you know, they gave me a new machine and basically $1,000.
Yeah.
I mean, essentially in the difference. And it was, and that, you know, I thought at the time like, oh, I will now always buy your stuff forever. Right? Just until you betray me in a terrible way, I will put up with all kinds of crap from you as a company.
Yeah.
And, but I wonder if you can, you know, if that interaction, if you can abstract that out to think about it, you know, how we're dealing with people with technology where it's just, you know, how do you get to the point where the person, where someone will trust you,
and
know that you have their best interest in heart, even if what you're saying isn't what you want to hear, because then you can start, then you can kind of short circuit or, you know, shortcut a lot of, I don't, you know, if I don't have to explain all the reasons why, I can just say, hey, do this and trust me, it's going to be good, and it doesn't matter if you know why. Or you'll figure it out, or you'll understand. Because that's how I like it when people do that to me. But I don't know. What do you know? And what do you think? What do you think about that?
Well, I think when you're trying to teach someone a new skill or how to use something, the first thing to do is don't make any assumptions.
Yeah.
You know, find out what their skill level is at, and you know, don't just assume that they know how to do something, because you might be explaining something to someone, and you say, oh, you just do that, and you go, and they're looking at you like, what? Because they, you know, that one thing that you have to do might involve 10 steps, but they don't know it because they've never done it before, and you know, you don't realize it because you've done it so many times that it's a bit more involved than just that. And I think the second thing to do is just have patience.
Yeah, it's, I mean, that's the second thing there is the hardest thing in the world, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. And it's so easy to get to that yelling stage. Just,
well, and you know, I just made a note here. Don't grab the mouse, right? Like, what's our first urge as geeks is, oh, I'll just do it for you. Let me fix it. Because I'm a hero. I'm the hero. I can fix everything. And
it's like that Nick Burns thing that you sent me.
Right.
You know, he's just, move. You're incompetent. You're an idiot. You don't know what you're doing. Just get out of the way. I'll do it all for you.
And you have to kill that inside murder it. Stab it until it's dead inside yourself. Because if that's even coming into your head, then it's going to poison everything.
Yeah.
And it will, and it's, and not just in that particular interaction, that is a terrible way to think about other people. John Kirk has been writing about this at Tech Opinions. you know, because my mom, you know, thought that you needed to close out your apps on the iPad. You know, you needed to load the Springboard and kill them so it wouldn't take up the memory. She's not stupid, you know, and like, and the fact that I thought, oh, that's so crazy, you don't do, you know, it's like, no, I need to explain. I explained to her, I said, this is why it's different, you know, that it's memory managed in a different way, and it's really, it's like a core, you know, design decision about the OS is that you almost never have to do that, only if an app is crashed. So never, don't even worry about it. And it's that patience and not making assumptions, right? Because if you don't make those assumptions, then you can, instead you can test, well, you can make little assumptions, right? You can test a theory and think, why does she think she needs to do that? Well, it's obvious, because you have to do it on your PC and you have to do it on your Mac, at least, you know, up until recently, or else the thing's going to run like a dog, and in a bad way, right? It's going to be awful. And, you know, when I got my iPhone, I thought it was pretty neat that you didn't have to, you know, reload stuff. And, but it took a while to kind of absorb that, hey, this really is different. You know, you never have to click save. That's really different. It's not, you know, it's, we don't have a file system. Sometimes I don't like that, but it is very different. And it means the experience is going to be different for people that aren't, you know, that aren't, you know, it's to take it back to the car thing, right? That, I might not like, you know, I might prefer, you know, my manual transmission, but someone with a CVT or, you know, some new 7-speed auto or something like that, they're going to have a profoundly different experience. And whether or not they know what's going on, it's kind of irrelevant.
Yeah. So what you were saying before, that you know, you have to kill the urge to grab the mouse, and that's, you definitely get that urge when you're watching somebody play a game. Because if you ever just watch someone playing a game, and of course they're not as good at it as you are, and you just want to wrench the controller out of their hands and just do it all for them. I had that experience earlier this year with my brother. He's not a big gamer. He's played a few games, but you know, he bought Aliens vs Predator for the Xbox 360 because he loves the Aliens and Predator series, and he wants to learn how to play it. And it's a way more complex game than what he's ever played before. So I had to really have a lot of patience with him, and you know, walking through the controller, just even holding the controller, and you know, which fingers to rest your where to rest your fingers on it, and there, yeah, there were a lot of sections where he's just having trouble just walking around, and he's not looking in the right places, so you know, there is that. I had to fight that urge to say, okay, look, I'll grab the controller and I'll point you in the right direction. Now, here, you can have it back, and I'll take it from you the next time that you're obviously failing. I did quite well at that. And what ended up happening was after a while, he got sick of not knowing what to do, and he gave me the controller. I never asked for it. He's just like, here, you do it.
Right. It's... And I think that, you know, that's kind of the, like, taking that, detaching enough that you're okay. Yeah, you know, watching someone playing a game is a good example. That, like, you're doing it wrong. You know, you're thinking in your head, oh, why are you doing that? Why are you doing that? You know, it's like if you were watching a, you know, a baseball game, right, or rugby or cricket, whatever. And, you know, you're yelling at the bat, what are you doing? You know, it's... You know, I guess it's not a great, perfect metaphor. It doesn't really line up right. But
When they pass to the wrong guy, you know, you idiot. Why'd you pass the ball to him? There was the other guy standing right next to you. So maybe they weren't aware of that.
But to me, in thinking about, like, you know, how can a technically proficient person learn to be a better teacher? It's, you also have to kind of learn, you know, you have to learn to be a better learner too, right? You have to learn how to absorb what the person you're trying to teach is really trying to do, even if they can't put it into words, because they probably don't have the right language.
Yeah.
And that's, so you have to be a little bit of a wizard, right? You have to, it's a little bit of a magic trick. Because if you try to explain what they need to know, then you're distracting from their goal, and they don't care about that. So it's, I think I put those in the show notes, the learned helplessness and learned industriousness. Like, to me, like, my sort of go-to trick to pull out of the bag is to figure out a way to find something that will make this person feel awesome, like they just did something really cool.
Yeah. There's something that I'd sort of forgotten about, is the reward. You know, when you're teaching someone, you have to, you need to give them that positive reinforcement. Because if you're always giving them negative reinforcement, just if you're constantly telling them, you're an idiot, you don't know what you're doing, here, I'll do it for you, they're not going to learn anything. And in the future, they're going to be more resistant to learning because right. they've had that bad experience. So if you want people to learn, you've got to be able to want them to learn. You know, because there has to be some sort of reward beyond just learning how to do the thing. So I don't know what sort of reward system that you'd have for teaching someone how to use a computer. I don't know, if you're teaching them to type or something like that, here, you can have a chocolate frog every time you up your word count or something like that.
Right. I mean, I've done volunteer work training dogs, and you know, it's like, you know, the positive reinforcement stuff. You did you do what I wanted you to do? Here's a treat.
Yeah.
And did you do something I didn't want you to do? I'm not going to say anything. I'm just, you know, pretend it didn't happen. I ignore it.
Hmm.
And, but you know, yeah, I think that's, I mean, it can be a little bit more complicated when you're dealing with people, but it's, I think about, like, you know, we've got this problem now, right? Where we've got iMessage and Google, you know, Hangouts or chat or whatever it is now. And, you know, you've got your Facebook Messenger, and, you know, maybe you've got an iPhone, but you have someone in your family has an Android device. Well, how do you get all this to work? Yeah. And because it's a problem, and especially a problem, these companies are all competing and they don't really make this stuff super, you know, they don't play together well.
Yeah, it's not interoperable.
Right. And for me, eventually I'm just like, you know what? I've gone all in on the Apple stuff, and I'll keep my Facebook and I'm keep this other stuff. But if you want to get a hold of me, or you know, it's just, I'm going to give you my iMessage. And if you don't have it, then it's up to you to figure it out. And, you know, occasionally that backfires, or occasionally I need to bend that rule because I need to do something. But rather than, like, argue about it or you know, change my behavior, because, I mean, ultimately I don't want to have multiple, you know, these redundant systems for keeping in touch, at least not beyond a phone number.
Yeah.
Or my email address. You know, it's a mess, and it's worse for everybody that it's that way. And so it's just, well, you just disengage. If it means we're missing out on some sort of communication, then okay. It's not a problem I can solve by will or by arguing with you about it. And the only reward is, you know, I mean, we have the new baby, so everyone's sharing photos, and we use PhotoStream. And well, now everyone in the family is getting in on the PhotoStream, and they're getting their Apple IDs set up and squared away. And it took some patience, right? It took some time, but
yeah.
Now there's this nice, smooth and easy way of doing it, rather than, oh, I have to deal with this and deal with that. I just take a picture and goes. And that's a kind of learning, right? It's a behavioral sort of thing, and it's not, maybe no one's even aware of it, right? It's this thing that's happening.
Yeah.
And it could happen. I'm sure it's like Facebook's the same kind of thing. Like, at some point, I'm like, oh, I'm done with Facebook. I'm deleting my account. I'm not going to use it anymore. And a couple months later, it just, I'm missing out on too much. I need to come back.
Yeah.
And it, you know, I wasn't being punished. You know, nothing was, I wasn't getting hit or people weren't yelling at me saying, hey, you're missing out on stuff. I just realized that there were things that, you know, there was some sort of little dopamine hit that I wanted that Facebook gave me in some cases, and I needed to stop getting angry at Facebook and just recognize that it was about how I used it and there was value there.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm sure there's brilliant minds at Facebook who know exactly how that works, and they're happy to have me back and seeing ads. But it's... trying to think if we can have any better, like, I keep thinking about those links I said there, that learned helplessness and learned industriousness, and the other link in Wikipedia, the four stages of competence. And maybe that's like the best way of putting it, is that you have this unconscious incompetence. It's, you know, you don't know what you don't know. You have no idea. And that's like, you're a new programmer, right? You have no, well, you probably know you're a little incompetent then, but when you're like after you've been programming for like a year, like, oh, I can do stuff. You know, I know what I'm doing, and you have no idea the dragons that are hiding.
Yeah.
And so there's unconscious incompetence, conscious incompetence, conscious competence, and then unconscious competence. So you don't even, you know, it's these like steps you go through. And maybe that's useful just to, because it's useful to have quick heuristics, right? So you can quickly evaluate a situation and think, where is this person at? Make a guess to try to figure out what you need to do. Because if I'm dealing with someone that, you know, if someone's unconsciously incompetent, they're probably not asking for help. They're probably going to resist any help. There might be very little you can do. Or you might need, if it's really important or urgent, you might just need to pull rank, right? And just come in and know you're going to have a fight. But as you get, you know, closer together on this scale, I mean, maybe it's something that I only know a little bit more. Like this, what we're talking about with the audio MIDI, you know, getting these calls set up. I mean, it's, you know, there's maybe five or six people I'm talking to about it, and we're all just kind of like, we're all in the same pack of runners. And one of us might pull ahead for a little bit or go explore some path and come back and talk about it, but I don't think any of us have it all figured out. I assume someone's going to like hit the prize and that'll be great. But, it's definitely not the situation where anyone should like be speaking authoritatively at this point. We're just, it's wide open.
So one last thing I think I'll ask you, do you find that you learn better when you're teaching someone how to do something?
Yeah, I think that's, people have said that before, right? Like if you can't teach it, you don't know it. Or I like the one I really like is, you know, if the answer isn't obvious, you're not asking the right questions, right? It's, cause that's really what I really like. Richard Feynman and his technique for learning, which is funny, and let's pull it up here, the Feynman technique. And it's my best. It's on the C2 wiki, which is one of my favorite websites ever. Feynman algorithm, and the form that I like best is just the simplest one, and it's just, you know, write down the problem, think real hard, write down the answer.
Yeah.
And if you're doing it, like, if you think like you're teaching yourself while you're teaching someone else, or whether you are or not, so you're your smart brain that's actually, you know, you've put on this task is now trying to teach your dumb brain, which is what you use most of the time, that's better than just saying, oh, I know how to do this, or it looks like this is the right thing. And it's just a different kind of, I think you get in a different mode when you're teaching, right? You think it changes your processing, your algorithm. And I think it's probably the best way to learn, right?
Yeah. I think it is. I mean, I had the experience when I was learning how to ride ride a motorcycle.
Right. You know,
when
When
I was learning myself, I was rubbish at it. But while I was learning, I was actually teaching my sister how to ride. So we went up on the farm and we'll get on the trail bike and we'll go around on that. And I found that after teaching her how to ride, I was so much better at it myself. You know, because I'd learned a lot through teaching her.
Right. You you think about, and I know my mom's talked about this, experiments in classrooms where they'll have, where it's group work, but it's structured in a way that it's not like everyone's working on the same project and turning it in, but where the teacher, you know, dispatches like this, you know, the first round of information, and then it's up for these little, you know, these smaller cohorts to then teach each other.
Yeah.
And the benefit of you will, and you will have more wrong answers doing that. There will be noise, right? But the benefit is that as soon as someone in the group figures it out, in their, you know, so there's 30 people in the class, but 5 people in the group. The person that figures out, you know, oh, I understand derivatives now, you know, I got it. That person is now in a much better position to teach the other 4 people than the teacher is, because they're excited because they just figured it out. And they were, and they probably just went through all the wrong answers. So, you know, so someone who's still struggling, they're closer together. So like when you were teaching your sister, like when you realize that you're kind of doing everything, like motorcycles, right? Counter steering. I mean, you're, everything, really everything's backwards. You're, you know, it's not, it's, you don't ride a motorcycle the way that you think you do until you do it. And, you know, it's just in the physics of what's going on, is it's, you know, these gyroscopic motions, and you know, we could watch YouTube videos and explain, you know, why it works and, you know, get into the physics, but it all, we wouldn't really be talking about the real thing, which is like, you look where you go, where you look, right?
Yeah.
And you, like target fixation, which I learned about the second day I had my bike, because I ditched it because I just, I don't want to go there. I don't want to go there. Don't go there. Don't go there. And then boom. And, you know, you could tell someone about that, but hearing it from, you know, some grizzled, you know, Harley rider is a lot different than, you know, someone that's like you and has had the same thing, you know, the same experience, and it's fresh.
Yeah. Yeah, so I certainly think that, you know, that's one way to be a better teacher is to, every time you're teaching someone something, is to look at it as an opportunity for you yourself to learn more.
Right.
And if you're excited about that, then that is definitely a way to be a better teacher, because, you know, if you have someone who just isn't enthusiastic about teaching or imparting knowledge or skills, you know, they just don't get the job done very well. So I think that's an important thing to be able to do, is to get excited that, you know, I'm showing someone how to use something, how to do something, and you know, if you're well, you can be overexcited, but you know, if you're excited about being able to do that, and you know, that's going, your excitement is going to rub off on the person that you're trying to teach, and then you know, and maybe that's how you do the positive reinforcement thing, that they're having a good time while learning,
right?
Because they're you're having that shared experience of we're both having a good time learning this stuff, and
yeah, and I think that's probably like the closest, you know, the most important thing is that enthusiasm, which is you know, it's not always the right. I mean, I'm probably overconfident. Well, I can say I'm overconfident, right? Yeah. I look at something, and this is, I think, you know, goes back to the way that my parents taught me and treated me when I was a kid. And you know, we got an Amiga 500 in 1986, and it was 5. You know, and this was this machine. You know, this machine. Steve Jobs was afraid of this machine, right? Like if Commodore hadn't screwed it up so bad, we would be living, you know, it'd be a very different world.
Yeah.
And it's so, just, you know, it's not. and I think just what, you know, the time I was born and the time a lot of people, you know, when my age, you know, if you're, I think from like 1978 to 1984, like the little curve of technology that we saw kind of rise up. Horace Dedue's stuff right now, the stuff he's putting out about this, some of the charts he's got is I think illustrates this perfectly, is we are really in kind of a sweet spot for teaching and learning, but also kind of a hard spot because a lot of the world that we thought we were inheriting isn't the world we got.
Yeah.
But it's an opportunity, and it's, I think on the whole, it pays out better to people that are a little bit over enthusiastic and a little bit overconfident because you're willing to try things and fail. Mm. Because at least with computers, maybe not with cars, but with computers, it's pretty safe environment now. I mean,
yeah.
There's only so much you can really do to screw yourself over. And I think, and we talked, you know, we were talking about that. Like, is it good or bad? I think on the whole, that's probably good, because if you can get someone enthusiastic and to think, hey, I can do this.
Mm.
And I guess that's sort of what I was thinking about with the magic trick, right? It's not a magic trick about what you're doing. It's the magic trick to get them thinking that they're the wizard.
Yeah.
And it's not even a trick. It's the truth. It's to get people to realize that, you know, my favorite Steve Jobs quote is, you know, that the world is made up of people no smarter than you.
Hmm.
And that you can change it, that you can do this stuff. And as soon as you, I'm almost doing the quote word for word. Once you realize that, everything changes. And that's what's awesome about teaching and being taught is, I mean, I can think to exact moments like growing up and in school and in life when I got something, right? And it's,
yeah.
Isn't that and it's always got a little bit of pain with it, right? Because you realize, oh, all these things I thought were wrong, you know, or, oh, you know, this, but that means, you know, when you think of all the implications, but it's just these flashes of, the great word for it is, you know, it's apprehension. Mm. It's another definition of the word, and it is from Latin, and it really means that you just grasp it, that your brain it's a different kind of thinking, and you just realize, oh, it's this deeper understanding, and like, I don't know, it's so awesome to me to experience that you want to share that kind of feeling with
yeah.
people, and you want to see someone else's eyes lighten up, because then that's all the payment I need. Like,
yeah.
That's just so cool. And makes me jealous for, you know, you think about really good teachers. I mean, it's got to be a rush, right? When
when someone gets it and you can see it and that they're excited, that they just sit there going, I understand this now, I get it.
Right. It's like, you know, things I like to do. I like to make people come with me to go see Beethoven's Ninth.
Yeah.
Performed live, and it's always awesome because, you know, I know what's coming, and
yeah.
I know, you know, why it's important to hear the whole thing, and I'd probably talk their, you know, their ear off afterward explaining everything, but it's just, I, you know, it's like this, you know, everyone's universe is, or everyone's mind has their own, you know, little universe, and it's, and until some idea or thought or experience comes into that universe, it just doesn't exist for them.
Hmm.
And so, and I know it's getting like, we're getting real meta here, but that's what it's all about with learning. And it's not just that it should be fun. I think when you're doing it right, it's fun.
Yeah.
And it's not even hard. It's painful sometimes, but it's like you have to just not mind that and learn that that's just part of the process. It's like, riding a bike, you mm. will fall down. You
yeah.
will scrape your knee. You're going to hurt yourself. It's worth it. And, you know, you take the training wheels off eventually, but you just try to do that before you get on a motorcycle. It's good advice. I don't know. I knew this was going to happen when we did this, that I would get, I am excited about. I don't know. Since I'm just already talking a lot, I'll ask you a question. So when you guys brought this up,
yeah.
and I could kind of sense, you know, that we would and I don't know what John's thoughts are on it. I imagine it's pretty similar, or like I said, we're all kind of, our Venn diagrams overlap a lot, I yeah. assume. Did you have this discussion, I feel, has become a real, like, central part of the way I think about a lot of things. And it's difficult to explain. It's, you know, it's just a lot of whole other topic. You know, it goes into many other topics. But, and kind of, you know, the idea behind why I started doing the podcasts and is that, you know, I'm not sure what the right word to use is, but that I did that. I had this apprehension of this process that really changed the way I think about pretty much everything. And I don't know what that is. And I don't know if talking about technology and teaching it is certainly a good example of it, but I don't know how to describe the larger picture. And so I guess I wondered, is this something that, did you have a moment like that or experience or something where it hit you like a lightning bolt that, oh, you know, there's something here. There's something I need to explore.
I think it's probably a series of moments.
Right. Well, that is what it's been for me. It's been a series, but I could probably bookend it for about a year before now and then kind of leading up and then through now, you know, that, you know, like a cascade almost of once you get going down this path, whatever weird path it is, it accelerates and it broadens out.
And certainly when you're on that path, you recognize that you're on it more readily, that, you know, so if you have one instance of, you know, someone who's not good with technology and you start thinking about that, the next time that happens, you know, you're more and more aware of it. So I think that's where this topic has come from, is that you just one day you have that realization that, oh, you know, somebody else isn't as good at this as I am. Why is that? And you keep seeing it and you keep thinking, why is that? Why is that the case?
Right. And it's at least for me, if you try to answer that question too soon, it blows up in your face. Like, here's an idea.
Yeah.
What if, you know, I think about, you know, everyone's got a computer in their pocket and we're always connected to the internet. And the answer to you know, most questions is seconds away.
Yeah.
And so, you know, whether it's true or not, we could entertain this idea that my brain now includes a little bit of the internet, right? That I can call stuff up in a fast enough that it changes how I think. And you know, 5 years ago, it would take me longer and it wouldn't be all the time. And 10 years ago, it would take me longer still and it wouldn't be all the time. It'd be much less information. But now it's really quick. And now sometimes, you know, you'll see things like this Twitter phenomenon, right, where you can, I don't need to go to Google anymore. I can just go to Twitter and get an answer from a person. So I think about it like, you know, like I'm diagramming hardware architecture that, you know, well, there are these machines and there's the internet and there's Twitter, and then there are endpoints for these that are brains, and then they connect to whatever. It's like object-oriented programming. I don't know what's going on. It doesn't matter. I'm sending you a message. You're sending me back, you know, some other message or not. Maybe just nothing happens. But sometimes, and it's just this fantastic short circuit or shortcut. I keep saying short circuit, where you're jumping over a lot of complexity and a lot of friction. And to me, I feel like that's really something new for human history. Like, that hasn't happened before.
Yeah.
Or it was limited to, you know, the super elites, and they still had a very limited subset of possible knowledge. And so I think, you know, if that's the case, or if something like that's the case, then, you know, and look at podcasting, right? Look at, you know, I mean, you know, Anodized got featured. And I don't know if when, you know, you saw that and you went in, if you looked at how many podcasts are coming out all the time, and you're
there's a lot of them.
If you just look at the new and noteworthy featured in technology, And it's just, you know, you just keep on scrolling. And there must be, I don't know, I assume they limited it somewhere. There must be 1,000 or something. Just a huge amount coming out. And it's growing. And it's, so I wonder about this, it changing the very nature of teaching and learning, and, you know, as a profession, as a activity, you know, culturally, because, you know, maybe, you know, we're on this cusp of this wave where everyone's becoming teachers, or, you know, 10% of the population are becoming teachers, and you're, you know, just as a, not a job, but just as something you do.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you know, yeah, we're doing I'm doing the Fiat Lux stuff, and you're doing anodized, and, you know, yeah, it'd be great to make money and, you know, to have it be a job. But if it doesn't, I think I'm still doing it anyways and enjoying it. And it's just this process of learning and teaching each other. And it's just this real organic thing. And you see that, and I'm sure it's, you know, that same kind of like flowering is happening everywhere. So it's, I don't know. It's just the whole thing fascinates me. Like, it just, you know, it keeps on getting deeper.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, when you do look at podcasting, you know, we're all sort of learning from each other. Cause if we're all listening to each other's podcasts and we can sort of, you know, learn what equipment we use and even just the techniques to do the actual show itself, you know, what segments do you have, what questions do you ask, and you know, pacing and things like that. That's, you know, we're all, without knowing it, we're all sort of sharing this information, and we're all learning from each other because we're all picking and choosing bits and pieces from, you know, everyone, and then sort of putting it together into our own shows.
Right. And it's really, and it's, you know, you think about like really the first like podcast that wasn't part of NPR's, you know, some other radio show I started listening to, it was Dan Carlin's Hardcore History. And then, you know, and then I got others, but, you know, he really got it. And, you know, he was a radio guy and brought just something unique that really, you know, I like history and I really like the way he does it. I'm a big fan. And I'm glad he's been really successful. And so that like brought this one stream of thinking about it. And then 5x5, you know, Dan Benjamin,
yeah.
You know, I just, you know, obviously you can't overstate. I mean, to me, much more influential and important than like Twit. There's nothing against Leo. It's just what fit me in a different way. Mm. And so, you know, but now like I find myself, you know, now that I'm actually doing it, and while I certainly read everything Dan says and listen to what he says and think about it, it's also a little bit of like, Saichi, like this, you know, if you see the Buddha on the road, you have to kill him. That like learning to like recognize when I have a hero, and also like questioning the hero.
Yeah.
And saying, hey, you know, I can love you for what you did and love what you do and disagree with you about things and try my own path. And I think, you know, if that same kind of experience is happening with, you know, the however many hundred people that I can interact with and actually, you know, comprehend on Twitter and the podcasts I listen to, and if all of them are doing the same thing, and, you know, you just draw these dots, right? Like the social graph that's going on, there's an insane amount of ideas coming in. And like you said it, like you might not even realize it, that I could be listening to it, something that, you know, like listening to like what you and John do, just the way you phrase things and put things together, and the way you know, like the bonus material stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like I think about that, and it's, you know, like, oh, I wouldn't phrase it like that. Like, that's not exactly what I want to do, but I would try it. Like, you know, and just so this idea that, you know, is sort of like orthogonal to everything else just pops out of that and then comes over to this other idea that I got from someone else. And I'm not doing anything. It's that just that connecting the dots thing.
Yeah.
And it's really cool to be watching it happen. And I hope it continues that way. Like,
Well, it's cool to take part of it.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, it's like we're all throwing rocks into a pond and you get these, the waves just, they go out and then they interfere with each other and you end up with these patterns. And that is what's awesome about it is this, you know, we're at this spot now with like, you think about like, there's blogs, like, think about like potentially revolutionary media stuff, right?
Yeah.
And there, you know, there's social media, you know, Twitter, Twitter is something, right? Twitter is doing something that's important and it's, you know, hard to figure out, but it's got some magic to it. And blogs did do, but you know, it wasn't, you know, there was a real difficulty for people to kind of lock in, you know, way to ever make money and not just be, you know, like blogging, like wasn't all the way there. There's problems with it. It doesn't solve all the issues. And, you know, just a website doesn't, you know, why should some things be an app, you know, a native app on your phone or, you know, or when it should be a real, real program on your Mac or whatever versus a web app. And there's some of that's about like protecting your, you know, your ability to control things. Some of it's just about making money because it's important. And I think about the same way with like, you know, we're putting out these audio files that people have to listen to, you know, in a linear fashion.
Yeah.
And it's new and different. And I mean, well, it's not new. It's old. It's radio, but it's a different form. And the, and there's so many like mismatches with how the rest of the web works. And it's just, you know, it's fascinating that there's kind of these black boxes that no one's really got a bead on it because we know the whole thing is going to grow. And it's not like we've like hit some steady state, even though I think it's real easy to forget that and to think that it's just how it is.
Yeah. It's going to change and evolve as we go along. This has been Anodized. Don't forget to check out anodizedpodcast.com for the show notes and more information on the show and bonus material. You can follow Anodized on Twitter and up.net at anodizedpodcast. If you have any comments or feedback, mention us. You can also head over to anodizedpodcast.com/contact to send us something a little bit more in-depth. You can follow Ben on Twitter at fiatluxfm. Visit his site, fiatlux.fm. And listen to his podcast. He has some great shows and he's doing something really unique, so definitely check them out. You can follow me on Twitter and up.net at Clinton1550. I occasionally write stuff at unsanelygreat.com. Rate us on iTunes, leave us a review, tell your friends about the show. It's the best way to help us out. And certainly you have been helping us out because we've been featured on iTunes, so Keep listening. We're very, very happy that everyone likes the show. Thanks very much for listening, and we hope to catch you next time.